And so the Unemployed Workers Association was a wonderful thing for the unemployed, in spite of all they say against it. It was wonderful, because we did get more, get better treatment, but more relief eventually. We got a script, instead of working for it, we had to, at one time there, we had to work for it. Well, they gave us a shovel and a pick and told us to go over to the Logging Highway and grub out stumps. Well, it took 30 workers a whole day, a whole week, for instance, to grub out a stump. And the futility of the whole thing, and there were machines rusting, lying idle, rusting. And here were two old fellows that I remember quite clearly on that project that died of exposure on that job. And so we said, well, what's the sense? What's the sense? So we had a demonstration after the hall about that. And it was a big one. And the argument that the government put up is that, no, we must have this, make these people work for their relief. We said, well, what's the point? The machines are rusting, not being used, and we go out there with picks and shovels. Well, we got to provide work. We said, all right, okay, give us all a teaspoon and a table fork. You can put thousands more to work. Just as sensible one way or the other, you know. But that was what they, and then they grub away at this old stump, so they had crosscut saws cutting the roots off all the time. And they hit rocks, so they had a man sharpening saws, so keep the saws sharp, so that they could saw away at these roots. So finally, it went on to the point where we had a demonstration, and I said, we're here, we're not going to do this anymore. This is nonsense. And then out of that, they gave us stumping powder. That was the next move. They gave us some stumping powder. And I was with the powder man, helping him. I was not an authority. They had to have a man that knew how to handle stumping powder. So we dig a great big hole under one of the great big stumps. We put a whole box of this dynamite in there, this stumping powder, and I think it's still going to Mars. And all that was left of that was just a big crater, but there were no stumps to cut off or no roots to bother with. And so then they bawled us out about that. They said, we're wasting powder. I said, well, we've got to get the stumps out. You know, and that's how that was the original beginning of the Logging Highway, as a matter of fact. Stupid. Of course, people wouldn't put up with that today. People have got a little more sense now, and they just wouldn't tolerate that kind of nonsense anymore. But you see, that was the first time that the workers were faced with a critical situation like the Depression, where there was no work, and there was no money, and they were so helpless. So they just did the best they could. And they started to demonstrate and have big protests and all this sort of thing eventually, but not at the beginning. It was quite, I guess, more or less docile. They were not properly organized to begin with, you see. But once they got a good organization, then they started to protest, then they had the big demonstrations, and culminated, I guess, in the Valentine Pier riot, and that was the big one. That was a big one, too. Of course, prior to that, the employed workers had the two big riots with them. One at Fraser Mills and one over here at Timberland. Blood was flying there too. That was not so much, that wasn't the unemployed that was behind that, and that was prior to that. And I worked out at Fraser Mills for 37 cents an hour and supplied about $300 worth of tools as a millwright, skilled millwright, which I had served my time for before that. I was able to build a mill at that time, as a matter of fact, complete myself. And I got 37 cents an hour. The green chains, the East Indian, and those people, they were getting 25 cents an hour. And they were out in the rain, in the snow, and they wouldn't even put a roof over for shelter. And we had a big demonstration at the Mohawk over that. The workers in the Mohawk were getting organized, and I was in on that. I had about six groups. You might come. They were similar to the Bloc Committee, six groups, and they didn't go by names in there at all, numbers. And because the bosses would put a stool pigeon in, and it exposed the whole thing. So we had little groups, six, five or six in here, and seven or eight over there. I was busy all the time organizing those groups, as a matter of fact, along with the other boys. And we had a little group here, a little group there, and we, from there we sent delegates to the Central Committee for the Mohawk, just for the Mohawk alone. And there was about eight or nine in that central body that coordinated the plans. And so one morning, strike. And the management of the Mohawk was thunderstruck. They just couldn't believe that there was such an organization. Strike, complete. Not a one stirring. And so this was one of the issues that was brought up with the covering the green chains. Because I had a group of East Indian workers that I was organizing, that I organized. I had one Japanese. There were three or four Japanese in that one. And all people. Whoever was affected, they were working down there, the people that were working. So that was under the Workers' Unity League. That was organized by the Workers' Unity League, which was a branch of the Communist Party. And they did get concessions. Well, they had no choice. They had to do something. The management, there was just no work. So there's a little joke coming up now. The next year, they went out again, almost done, 100%, another strike. And so when there was a strike on, they were overhauling the mill a little bit. So they asked me to come down to help overhaul the mill, which I was the millwright, you see. And so I said, okay. So George Burns was the superintendent. And I think it was the first day or the second day after I started, he came to me and he says, now he says, we don't want any agitation around here. He says, we want work. And I said, okay. No, this was prior to that strike. I said, just prior to it. Because he knew I was one of the kingpins. And so he says, we want work. I said, well, I says, what can I do to organize? He says, in a matter of a week or two, it's all going to last. I says, no, I said, I'm willing to work. I said, well, I've done my best for you when I was here. Oh, yes, he says, but he says, you're an agitator. And so, anyway, they had this big strike again. It was shortly after that, that's right. And I met George Byrne down in the streets of Westminster, and hi, George, you're not doing anything. No, he said, you know why. Strike on. I said, what are you getting down there now? Are you getting work or are you getting agitation? He said, I'm getting agitation.
Do you know when that would have been?
Pardon?
Do you know when that would have been? Before the 30s?
It'd be in the 30s. I don't know the exact year. I couldn't say exact year.
So that was at the same time as you were organizing the unemployed?
Oh yeah, I had been organizing unemployed and organizing these groups in the sawmills too, as well as the unemployed. We had these little, like I was mentioning, little groups, five or six here, five or six there, and we didn't go by names, we went by numbers. And then the delegates were going from the different ones were by numbers. There was no names. It was contrary to our laws to have to mention names, right, because of the fact of stool pigeons getting in, you see. The bosses, they will pay handsome prices to get a stool pigeon in, to break up something like that, if they feel it's necessary. Mm-hmm. If it's not too serious, they usually don't bother too much, but if they figure it's vital, and in those days it was vital,